here we are. This is Sex, Love, Psychedelics, and I'm your host, Dr. Kat, bringing you psychosexual conversations that will leave you intellectually turned on and hungry for more. Hey lovers, I am returning from Burning Man just a few days fresh, and I swear I still feel like I'm in outer space. If you have ever been to Burning Man, you know that it's important to be able to take a few days after to be able to ground, to be able to nourish yourself, to be able to really integrate what just happened to you, because so much can happen out there in that space. You know, it's anything that you can imagine and everything that you can't imagine. And of course, add on there the added stressors of you know, the weather conditions that, as well as resources or lack thereof resources, is, you know, it can bring up a lot of our stuff. And to me, it's a really potent container for us to be able to face off with some of our parts or face off with relationships and see what's there beneath the niceties or the ability to leave, you know, in everyday life. We're really forced to communicate or really forced to see our patterns come to the surface. So that's where I'm at. I'm still a floppy mush puddle, but I got dressed and I put on makeup for this man here, Yosef Saghi, because he's honestly the only reason that I would be in pants right now. And for those of you who have experienced Burning Man, we're going to drop in about two of my favorite topics, four of my favorite topics, beginning with Tantra and BDSM and the inner fusion of those two. But we're also going to be getting into the power of play parties and how eroticism can really evolve us when we tune into the subtleties, the nuances of the different parts and the characters that we play in our everyday life, and how we can bring that into the bedroom to really discover ourselves, to liberate ourselves, to integrate ourselves. And similar to like what I was just referring to with Burning Man, you know, sex can be a ceremony. Burning Manning can be a ceremony. Life can be a ceremony. You know, this idea, this metaphor that we can step into something, step into a container that with intention or with ritual or with, you know, a direction that we want to be putting our conscious awareness to, we can transform, we can evolve, we can become, we can, you know, have an alchemical change in ourselves that is still important on the other side to integrate or to, you know, digest in order for it to become a lasting change or a sustained transformation. And if you have been to Burning Man, you know it's a lot of celebration. You know it has a lot of trials. I love to see this as a psychedelic ceremony of sorts. You know, they joke that you don't necessarily get the burn that you want, but you get the burn that you need. And you get it if you reflect on it and you take the lessons and you are able to discern perhaps what something was telling you or perhaps a skill that you gained from this experience. Like that's really how all of this works. You know, conscious life, conscious living, conscious work takes the awareness and just as much as the change in the behaviors. So if you're following me from last year, I shared about how that was hands down the roughest yet the most profound experience that I had at Burning Man. It was just 2 months after the passing of my father, and I had decided to camp solo, and all of that would have been fine, but it was so fucking hot that I felt that I was emotionally not solid. And as a result, breaking, losing, forgetting shit all over the place. But the beautiful aspect of it all was that in my grief chaos, I found safety in being cared for by strangers. At every meltdown, physically or emotionally, just being, whether it was connected to or held or given a cold brew, it was a really powerful lesson of just feeling ultimately supported by the world, but from my spiritual lens, supported by my dad. This year, my experience was profound in a much more mystical, life mission sort of way. I was camping with an incredible group of humans and my love, many of whom are leaders in the psychedelic world, as well as sensual embodiment or self-development. And in respect to Brian Marasco's book, The Immortality Key, and his work surrounding the Eleusinian Mysteries, our team built a giant chalice half buried in the sand. This chalice served as a gathering point for us to teach classes from, lectures about Brian's work, my own personal talks on sex and psychedelics, and the celebrating of sunrises and community. Now, there's a lot to unpack here, and I wrote all about how I saw Burning Man as this metaphor, or could be like a modern day Eleusinian Mysteries, in a sense. Pilgrimages, ecstatic celebrations, psychedelics, visions, ego deaths, and consciousness expansions. So if you're curious about what I mean with all of that, then check out my Instagram reel at Sex Love Yoga and follow along with my perception of the comparison. I'll include the link below so you can find that, because this is a giant rabbit hole to go down and I have got to get to my guest right now. So I'm just going to sprinkle a little tease here and dive down this on another podcast. As I continue to deepen my work with psychedelics and sex, I am in constant awe of what I discover as the connective tissue between our ancient and our modern worlds. You know, I keep seeing the sacredness next to the celebration and the play, the ritual next to the eroticism, the science next to the mysticism. But we all have to be really, really present to these nuances and the subtleties that lie in the ceremony that exists in it all, which is really what the conversation that you're about to hear with Yosef is about. Yes, we talk about Tantra and kink, but what's most potent about our conversation and is that it's about the healing and the evolution that occurs in the nuances of love, of sex, or of our personal patterns, our desires, and our fantasies. And it's my excitement that you'll get to see these ways that we apply spiritual theory into practical applications and even playful applications. Yosef and I are incredibly playful humans. So you'll see how we use that in our own relationships, how we use characters, archetypes, play, role play, in order to transform these aspects of ourselves or really integrate these aspects of ourselves and dissipate the shame so that we can be our fully fledged selves with such calm, regulated nervous systems and actually access the self-compassion and love that so many teach or preach on social media. So I've had the honor of witnessing Yosef's evolution, not only as a person, but as a teacher as well. Starting the first week of October, he will be one of my guest teachers for the course, Sex, Love, Psychedelics, Alchemy. He will be teaching alongside me as we get into the techniques of impact play, rope bondage, fusing the power play, the sensuality, the spirituality. We're going to get into the theory as well as the skills surrounding how you can play with your lover. And if you're wanting to learn more about what's possible in the erotic arts, then I want to see you in there. Check it out and hit me up for any questions. Link is in the show notes. I'm so excited to have one of my closest friends here on the podcast. And this guy I've witnessed for years. So we've known each other for years, and I've gotten to witness your evolution, both sexually, relationally, personally. And it's been an honor because you just do such an amazing job of self-reflection, introspection, taking the points and finding the connection between the different aspects of yourself and really integrating the full spectrum of yourself. So you sent me, Yosef, you sent me your bio, and I'm reading this bio and it's like, he does coaching, he does somatics, he does tantra, BDSM, you know, sex education, that kind of thing. I was like, no, bro, I'm going to call you. We're going to rename this because there's you need like a title, and none of this like embodies who you are. I'm like, Yosef is like the flogger of dragons. He's like the master of play party ceremonies, you know, like come on, we need to get a little more creative here. You're way more than just a sex educator and a coach.
I will gladly take all of that on. Yeah, one of the things that I'm sort of leaning into and that's been such a gift through BDSM is this idea of like the different archetypes and just playing with that. And yeah, maybe one day I'm the flogger of dragons or whatever it is. And I'm feeling like I felt over the past little while this archetype called magic that comes through when I'm in the play spaces or when I'm teaching and being in that role. And yeah, it's, I feel like all of those things are like things I do, but they're definitely so limited once like you're in the container. It's like, who knows what can happen, which is why I like magic. It's sort of like a mystery where it's going to go.
Yeah, it's kind of like consciously playing with the unknown and saying, I am embodying what an unknown is. I've had several guests on the podcast and we talk about archetypes as these personifications of these exaggerated qualities of being human and like, you know, the concept of playing out or embodying a character or an archetype, almost like in theater. Like I'm in acting class, even though I've never taken an acting class in my life, I'm pretty sure I am. We are you and I, we just are natural actors.
Yeah, I think that actually everybody's always acting, right? We're always performers. We're performing something. We're performing a certain part of ourself that we face forward so people don't see another part of ourself. Mm. And so there's always this performative aspect. And I think to be in denial of that is problematic, and where you say, okay, I am performing anyways. So let me take a look at what part I do want to show. And maybe I can bring forth a more authentic self. And even this idea of authenticity, like, changes all the time. You're authentic to who you are now, but you learn more about yourself and there's more and more. And so that's why I think that there's such a gift in performance and in acting that you really get to bring to life all the multifaceted parts of yourself. And I've totally seen different parts of you and they're all super beautiful and amazing. And it's fun to be in a friendship and in a group of people that really allow all the parts of ourselves to come forth, which most people don't have access to.
Yeah. It's funny that you say the word performative, performing and authenticity in the same sentence, because you're, you know, somebody's listening to that and they're like, oh, I don't get it. But it's honestly, I see it as the paradox of those things coexisting at the same time. I am authentically, so here's a good example, and I would love to hear some of the characters that you've come up with. My partner and I, we use characters as a way to create allowance and acceptance of wherever we're at. So I have a character of Princess Pillow, and she's the one who's just the like super lazy and luxy and just wants to be taken care of. Like, take care of me, I'm tired. or Pancake, who's incredibly anxious and hard on my, you know, hard and just has overwhelm. So like when Pancake is around, like, you know, I just get to be anxious and a little ball of mushy. Allowing that part to be here. So when you have characters and when you have archetypes, what does that look like? Or who do you like to play?
Yeah, I haven't named them. And I really like that idea of naming them. But I'll be suddenly in awareness that I'm getting like really angry and frustrated about something. So I'll give my partner a heads up and say, I'm going to be angry. I'm not angry at you. I'm just angry around you. Right. Yeah. Like, can you hold space for that, or vice versa? Or sometimes we'll catch ourselves and we'll just be frustrated about something, and she'll come into the kitchen and she'll be like, ah, and then I'll just like lean into it and go like, ah, and we'll yell together and like bring it out of each other instead of being like, oh wow, I can't handle that. So
yeah.
I think the parts of me that have been really coming forth more and more over the last few years are the parts that are more of these raw and primal emotions. Whereas growing up in Canada, you're Canadian, you're very nice and polite. And also in the fields that I was working in and the way I had to present myself, I feel like I had a persona of being kind, always collected, always zen, always like very under control. Mm-hmm. And so the parts of me that have been craving to have life are the parts that are more wild, that are out of control, that are reckless, that are like, those are the parts that have been wanting more and more space to live. But they also, there's the other part of me that wants it to feel safe for them to come forward. And that's always really tricky, like to find that balance of like allowing yourself to be chaotic, but know that you're safe to be chaotic right now.
That's such an interesting and important insight to have there, because many of us do identify as kind, or we do over-identify as our whole being as someone who's a great communicator. But there are times where I'm a shitty communicator, you know, like where I freeze, or when I pull away, or, you know, like, or when I'm, you know, spicy. We'll say spicy when I'm spicy. And you, as being a leader in the sex education world, it's like, you know, men want to be sex workers. They want to teach around sexuality. And I'll be honest, Yosef, some of them, and many of them, I wouldn't want to be within 20 feet of. Yeah. As a cisgender male, you being in high integrity of your work, what do you think, what do you have to be conscious of? Or, you know, these parts, and I'm integrating the question that you just said, you know, there's this part of me that wants to be chaotic, and there's this part of me that wants to be kind, that wants to be safe, that wants to be, you all, like, I see you as a safe container. So how do you manage all these parts and still show up as this integritous leader in this field?
That's a great question. There's a couple of things that come to mind. And I think the first one is constantly questioning myself. Am I being an integrity? Am I still being integrity? Like looking at the shadow, looking at the things that come up before they become actions, when they're still just like desires, inklings in the head, and like wondering, is that an integrity? And then recognizing that if there's something inside of me, it deserves to have its existence and it's right for expression, but the question is, in what container does it get to be expressed? Because it's something very different being in a professional container with someone than being in a playful container that's mutual.
Yeah.
So I think where we see a lot of the trouble in the industry is that those lines start getting blurred. And I can behave the same way when I'm holding a container for someone else's growth than when I'm in a mutually explorative container. Right? Because when I'm, whether it's an event or I'm working with a couple or an individual and leaning into this kind of work, I'm of pure service to them. Mm-hmm. So even like, I know, I created my own negotiation document for scenes, for BDSM scenes, and it's heavily influenced by yours and a couple other people. So I've got so much gratitude for you, and I have your name at the bottom of it, so everyone knows that I got a lot of it from you. But so I have one for a dom and one for a sub. I have two different forms when I create things. So when if I'm going to step into a scene with someone professionally and I'm the dom, I don't even fill my dom form. I just have them fill the sub form. I have my own boundaries around it. I get to choose my boundaries, but I don't bring my desires into that container. Whereas if I'm going to have a playful interaction with someone where it's mutual, I'll fill out my form, they'll fill out their form, and then we look for the Venn diagram of where things overlap. There's a difference there. So there's a space for my desires, which might include things that are more primal or more chaotic or, you know, more expression of myself. There's a space for that, but it's not professional work that I do.
Oh, I love that. And that, so you're describing this in the context of the power dynamic of teacher student, or, you know, dominant and submissive, where you're not, yeah, again, it's not about your you getting what you need, but it's even thinking about like, how do we expand that into bringing in the conscious awareness into other relationships as well of this same dynamic?
Yeah. I just know for myself, if I want to express certain parts of myself, I want to know that I'm going to be held. Mm-hmm. That experience. I want to know that there's really space for my full expression. And how would I do that? Well, it's to have a conversation with someone and knowing, first of all, that they're willing to do it. And mm-hmm. even if they're willing, are they able to? Because someone might say, yeah, I can do that for you. But if I don't feel that, I'm going to hold back.
How do you feel that?
I think it's a combination by now are these sort of like imperceptible subconscious things, but it's a combination of things that I pick up in my mind, of qualifications of the person, and a sense in my body of safety around them, and a sense that, you know, they can really hold that. And I think I know what it's like when I go there and I hold that space, so I know how I feel there. So it gives me a sense of how I would feel being held in that space.
Mm-hmm. And so for the lay person who's not understanding the concept of feeling, right, how would you describe them to identify that?
That's great. So I would say it's a regulated nervous system, which means that my breath is calm, it's slow, there are deep and long breaths, my heartbeat is really slow and regulated. There's very little tension in my muscles. I feel very loose in that space. So there's a lot of like physical markers that I can feel in my body, and the combination of those mean, oh, I'm safe. Whereas if I'm like sweaty, if I'm fidgety, if I'm tense, if I'm breathing faster, I know, okay, I don't feel so safe in this situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for either of those to sit, like you said earlier, to sit and reflect on, you know, to ask the question, how is it that I'm feeling right now? I'm noticing these symptoms. What is it that that's indicating, or what am I noticing in that? Because right now I still feel in outer space after Burning Man. So I'm like, and I just drink a cup of coffee. So part of me recognizes some of those same symptoms, but I know that I'm safe with you.
Well, the coffee elevates your heartbeat, right? And it does all those things. So
yeah. That's what's happening. It's okay. As a cisgender woman in this world of sexuality, you know, there have been times in the past where I've experienced, and I hear this a lot even today, but people will say, I am in integrity. I am telling everybody that I'm involved with. I am, you know, being integritous with you, and I'm not seeing that. So I think there might be a confusion of people understanding what the word being in integrity is. You are a model of this, in my opinion. Like, your actions and your words and your intentions are all aligned. Like, they're the same, and you're consistent with that. And when I'm thinking of people who are saying that they're in integrity, but they're not really, it almost like can cause a self-doubt in our bodies of like, is this actually safe? They are telling me the truth, but something about this still doesn't feel quite right.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like a funny thing. I'm not without fault, and I've made mistakes in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think what I'm willing to do, and what I can't not do actually, is I can't not look at it and learn from it and grow from it. Like, mm-hmm. that just creates suffering for me. And so if I have a situation, then I reflect on it after and I feel like, oh, I wasn't in full integrity in that situation as much as I could have been, then I really like sit with it and be like, okay, what part of myself that I'm not looking at, this mm-hmm. shadow self of me, sort of came through there that I wasn't even aware that existed. Mm-hmm. And I'll like want to give it life, and I'll want to see it come forward in just with myself.
Yeah.
And learn about it. And I think that anytime that we're not in integrity, it's really just an extension of an aspect of ourself that is not yet in the conscious mind to work with, right? Because once it's the conscious mind, if you're not in integrity, it's because you chose not to be. And that's like a different set of issues, that there's people who choose to not be in integrity because, I don't know, for whatever reason.
Protector parts. There's what? fear, shame. Right. Yeah.
Well, in that case, then I guess it's all shadow, right? So it's all parts that are still not fully aware of. I think if we really truly became fully self-aware, no one would do anything that was harmful to anybody else at that point. And all the work that I do, even though the focus of it is sexuality, the real reason behind everything that I do is because what I get off on the most for people is to have paradigm shifts of self-awareness for themselves. And I just feel that this is the place where so many of the shadows can come up and so many of the insecurities can come up. And then it's just a reflection of what's going on in everybody's life. That's how I've learned most about myself personally, is through my relationship to my sexuality. You know me, but I don't want to go into this, but briefly, I was like in a cult for 25 years. And coming out of that, I wrote at the time a blog called How Sex and Drugs Saved My Spirituality. And literally the two things that have brought me the most self-awareness were the things that were repressed and not so much encouraged there, which was exploring psychedelics and exploring your sexuality. Nothing has given me more self-awareness than those two things. And that's why I love that you weave those two together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And here's a very good example of, as you're describing how sex can be psychedelic, as you're saying, you're having these paradigm shifts, you're discovering new parts of yourself, your shadows are integrated. Like, that is how it can be psychedelic. With or without a substance, it changes our consciousness.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, whether it's really explicitly in subspace and in dom space, where you go into altered states, and that can be really powerful, but any type of connected sex. My first psychedelic experience was way before I ever experimented with psychedelics, was through a tantric massage experience. And I suddenly just blasted off into the universe. And like, I felt one with everything. It was like the craziest thing. Never had experienced it before.
How old were you?
34.
34. And you had a tantric massage that put you into another dimension.
Yeah.
How? Tell us more about that. That's like. Yeah. Here, let me give you a chocolate chip on the
I mean, basically, my experience was, so I was still in the cult at this point of time, but I was like with a leg out, with foot out, like for a while, and something had been calling me for a long time was tantra. And because I feel like I've always had like a natural knowing and feeling of the body, people would always come to me for massage. So my first, where I wanted to experiment first, was to take this deep dive tantric massage certification. So I went from not knowing anything about tantra, maybe I read one book, to suddenly like going deep dive into a container that was much more sex positive than I've ever been in. And suddenly there's like 30 something people in the room, and we were going to learn both conceptually, but also practice full body massages, including genital massage, and trading every day, different people each day. So I'd never had any type of experience like that. And on the third or fourth day in, when we were getting a little bit more equipped with tools and going deeper into the work, and I was receiving a massage, suddenly in the middle of it, it went from like, oh, this is a nice massage in my body, to I blasted off. It was my first non-genital local orgasm. I had a hard orgasm where like it felt like completely open. I like cried these tears, but they weren't like sadness. It was this tears of like the interconnectedness of all things and the love for all people. And it was this super psychedelic experience that I had. And I came out of it, like I came back, like landed back. I was like, oh, wow, I'm actually in a room here. There's, you know, it was totally like being on a trip. And I think it was the next day that someone I was working on had that experience as well. And I was like, wow, this is such a beautiful gift that we get to share with each other. So that was my deep dive. And of course, so when I came back from that into my now like mundane world that I'm living in, I felt like for 2 months straight, I felt like I was just floating through the air. Like I didn't have to touch the ground to walk. And I was in this really altered state. And eventually by, you know, I kept my own practice as much as I could, but not having the partnership to explore that in and some other things, it started weaning off. And then the next big breakthrough I had was with psychedelics just a few months after that. That was my first psychedelic.
Wow. It's like, so as you're talking about that story, it almost reminds me of, you know, having a sexual awakening story like that is very synonymous to a spiritual awakening. Yeah. As you're saying, I could barely touch the ground and floating. I'm, you know, and I'm thinking back to all the times, and we have many sexual awakening stories, right? We don't just have one. We can have infinite.
Yes. Oh, so many. Yeah, definitely. I mean, that one started breaking apart all the paradigms I had around monogamy, because I was a monogamist up until that point. And just some of the experiences that I had there, there was like a couple there and the girl was flirting with me and I had such shame. How dare she flirt with me? And she's good to came with this guy. And there was this other girl that I was connecting with. And I was like, how can I even like that? The second girl's giving me attention. Like I had like all these things like happen in my mind over this retreat. And this isn't the after hours stuff, you know, and it wasn't even something I was going and expecting, but those three humans completely started shattering any paradigm I had that relationships could only look one particular way. And that was another huge gift that I left with from there. And then a couple months later, stepping into that psychedelic container, I felt like it pulled the thread a little bit. Like it created that like torn thread in the sweater. So then on the psychedelic experience, I could just pull it and completely unravel everything else. And I went from being the guy that thought that he was going to have a family and four kids and, you know, the traditional job and all of that, to just letting go of all of it. I don't want to get married. I don't want to have kids. I don't know where those ideas were, never mind in the beginning. In this place. I don't want to have a 9-to-5 job. And from, those two experiences, the Tantra and the psychedelics, it unraveled everything in my life. And at age 35, I started on a blank slate, creating a new life that felt more aligned. And going back to the integrity thing, felt just so true to me. And it became really hard for me to bring into my life anything that didn't align with this newer truth that I was finding.
And what was it, how could you describe to people who are on a spiritual journey or a self-reflection journey of like questioning relationships, questioning their life, the career that they do, the difference between non-alignment and alignment?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think you can find yourself being in non-alignment when the voices in your head are saying things like should or have to, right? It's like, oh, I'm not monogamous, so I should be polyamorous. Oh, that's the only other possibility for me. Yeah. Oh, so I should have relationships that look like this. I think that's where the non-alignment happens. And I think alignment comes from a place of you giving yourself permission to be in the not knowing and unfolding. So I definitely, you know, like from having the pendulum go one way, it swung the completely other direction. And I became very explorative with my sexuality. And I had like a couple of years where I was just like trying like so many different things. But it also felt from a place, like in retrospect now, I can say it felt like it came from a place of me just trying to like catch up. I live my life a certain way. So now I'm 35. So now I got to catch up. And that's also like, I have to catch up. Yeah. That's also like this, that wasn't fully aligned. I feel it was right for me at the time in retrospect, because I needed to see that to find the center.
Yeah, there was a part of you that was feeling the FOMO of, of not having had those experiences. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I was definitely living from a FOMO place. And occasionally I still catch myself in that, including Burning Man this year. And I was like, a few days before, like into the burn, I was like, oh, maybe we should go up. And I think if we would have made it up there, we would have made it just for the mud. So I'm glad we didn't. But yeah, I catch myself still in that FOMO. And so when I see myself in that place that it's FOMO, now I'm more aware of that. And now I'm like, you know what? I don't want to do this from FOMO. So if I can let go of wanting it from the FOMO place, and if it's still a true desire on the other side of that, okay, then I'll explore it. But I definitely don't want to feel compelled, whereas my compulsions came externally before from voices outside. Now to have a compulsion from like a woundedness inside, that doesn't feel right either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's such an incredible story to hear that you had these breakthroughs like that, and then to have a clean slate to start from. I think for many people, that would be terrifying to think about, to start from a clean slate, like that almost being overwhelming, the infinite possibilities that are available to you. How did you integrate that, such a big breakthrough? I mean, I heard you say you jumped in and were trying things. And I think that is, for people to give themselves permission to, yeah, dive in, go wild. Maybe you do go chaotic for a little bit while you figure things out. I don't know. Your advice.
Yeah, I thought that I needed to go like crazy in the way that like I would imagine someone in their early 20s should, which is like just like sex, drugs, rock and roll, like that kind of lifestyle out like that. But that was never really what I wanted. Like I want connected. I wanted to feel meaningful. Like meaning was very important for me. So when I went into a blank slate, it was really blank slate. Lost all my friends. So I started, I have no friends. I have no sense of identity. I leave this cult. I have no connection to whatever God means. I have like nothing in my life. And it was a lot of painful and suffering, severe depression. And I learned to harness the depression as a tool to redirect myself. Oh, if I'm feeling depressed, it means I'm trying to force myself to do something that's not right for me. Okay, stop. Let's try another direction. So I started harnessing the depression and then harnessing the anger and the frustrations and trying to learn from all those different things to direct me. But it was a really painful time because like losing your sense of self and personality and all those things. I look at pictures of myself. I don't even look the same. It's painful. It's like a dissolution of the self. And what's on the other side of that, and the process I feel like I'm going into now, is that like rebuilding of the new body.
Yeah.
Right? The new physical body, the new emotional body, the new spiritual body, they're all now growing and they're young because I'm 41. So like I have a new, very young body that I'm interacting and interfacing in the world with right now. And it's very curious still. Mm. So, yeah, I think my way now is more from a place of like the curiosity and trying to temper in a little bit and be a little bit more slow with things instead of rushing, because sometimes when I've rushed it hasn't always been the best. So noticing the desire, being with the desire, allowing it to percolate, and if I let it go too long, then it feels like I'm dishonoring it if I'm not exploring it. But if it goes too short, it feels like I'm not doing due diligence. But like knowing when the desire feels ripe and full and blossomed, and from there, okay, what's an action that I can take around exploring that?
Yeah. Yeah. Which I, you know, as much as you're describing a young self, to me, this is very mature. This is a mature process to go slow, to be curious, to be open and allow things to maturate there. That doesn't to me sound like a young part. I think our young parts are more rash and more, you know, jump in there and fuck around and figure it out. You know, fuck around and find out.
Because my young curious boy is still sitting on the shoulders of this like aged wise sage that I was. That I was that in my 20s.
Yeah.
I was that guy already. Like in my 20s, I was, you know, teaching spirituality in front of big groups and working with, like, I was doing all of that. So I front loaded my sage years really, really early. And so my young boy gets to experiment with the support of this guy that was holding it all together and was very measured.
Beautiful. Integrating these parts. Yeah. The young boy with the master sage. And I actually see that in the way that you've been curating these self-development events disguised as play parties in Los Angeles called the Mystery Temple. And I want to go into that. And I fucking love how you framed that, because for me, some of my biggest sexual and personal expansions happened because of play parties. And so I want to focus on what that was like for you and what the premise is behind these offerings that you do.
Yeah. It really sort of just, it feels like it happened to me. Like I wasn't expecting to suddenly be the creator of the fastest growing conscious play party in LA. You know, and right off the bat, I think that's happened. I actually don't feel there's any event like it. Mm-hmm. But where it came from, in a sense, was I was going to play parties. And my general experience with play parties, and there are exceptions, but my general experience was that the people who were going there were overwhelmingly very well-to-do socioeconomically, predominantly white, predominantly straight, and there was often a dynamic of, it felt like women would have to be performative. They were there for the sake of the men's expression, sexual expression. Mm-hmm. Well, and you see that in a lot of play parties where men pay a lot and women pay a little or come for free. So it's almost like men are paying to have access to women subconsciously is what's going on there. And all of those dynamics really bothered me. One of my biggest values is inclusion. And so I was like, how can I do the exact opposite of that? So my play events are radically inclusive of BIPOC and queer communities, and then get discounts to join. And actually, the more and more Mystery Temples I've had, the more diverse and the more queer they've become. And that's been a lot of fun. The price point is close for everybody. So like I said, there's discounts for marginalized communities, but the price points are relatively close for everyone and relatively low. So it becomes more inclusive socioeconomically, and it doesn't create this sort of like power imbalance. And I would say that the other thing about it is that there's always a theme, and we're exploring a facet of our shadow around our sexuality. So the last one was called Sacrilicious, and it was all about exploring how religion has created shame and perpetuated in our sexuality. So how can you reclaim that and not throw the baby out with the bathwater? Like, how can we reclaim the ritual and the beauty and the connection to divinity that comes through religion, but without all of the patriarchy and the shame? So that was what we played with there. Another one we had was called Oh My Goddess, and it was really about allowing women to step into their full sexual expression and kind of take the leads the right way to say it, but to really like own their desire, and that includes what they want to experience, but also what they need to feel safe to experience that and allow them to speak that into the space. And so having all the different themes and having about like an hour and a half or so of these structured play shops and connection exercises leads into this place of juiciness later on in the open space where, and it's completely sober event. So you don't get to like, get high to escape those parts of you. So if you're uncomfortable, if you are fearing rejection, if you aren't like, you know, sure about your communication, you got to sit with it. Mm-hmm. You got to be with it. You don't get to bypass it. And it's a safe space to do that. And everyone knows that.
And this is, again, how sex can be psychedelic. It's the inclusion of all these nuanced parts of ourselves that we would otherwise hide. Because we know that the more vulnerable we can be in the more turned on we can achieve. Yeah. We can experience higher states of ecstasy when we experience the depths of our vulnerability. And one thing I need to highlight about you and about the work that you do, because I know that you facilitate so well the conversation around consent. And that is something that I have not seen at so many play parties or in the swinger world. And this is something I repeatedly hear from my clients who are in the lifestyle that there isn't a container set, there isn't a conversation about consent, that they take Molly or they take drugs to bypass their own boundaries in order to put themselves into a space to be sexual or to be turned on. And that's not authentic for them. So can you explain this container that you create? Why is this so unique and powerful and healing?
Yeah. Around the consent thing, I do see more and more other groups really, like in the play parties, go to like putting more attention on consent. Mm-hmm. But what it's starting to feel like is it's like, oh, this is the thing that we need to do so that everybody's okay, right? And so there's this sort of sometimes reluctant, or sometimes it's actually like, you know, yeah, let's do this. Let's do the consent thing so that everybody feels safe. And I think that that's one part, and probably the most important part of the consent, is to create a safe container so people can be expressed. What I like to do with my consent talks, and I think it's what you got to do with anything that you want people to really integrate, is have them find their personal buy-in. Hmm. So it's not, I'm going to ask for consent now so that you know, that I'm allowed in this container and that the peer person will interact with me and that I'm making sure I'm okay. It's like, okay, how can we use the conversation of consent as a tool for your own personal growth? Mm-hmm. Because we have all been programmed to not be aligned with our desires. We're from very young, from when we're children, when we want something, so many times we're told no. And when we set boundaries of what we don't want, so many times they get bypassed. Mm-hmm. So we've all been programmed to not honor our desires and boundaries. So I use the consent talk as an actual opportunity to step into and own your desire and step into mm-hmm. and own your boundary in yourself before you actually go with anyone else. And so it goes from a place of not just like, oh, consent so I can have an interaction, but I'm going to sit across from you. I'm going to look you in the eyes. I'm going to tune in now. And not just what my head is saying, oh, I'm going to play party. I should play. So I'm going to ask for play. But like, all right, how do I really feel in my body? What mm-hmm. is my emotions telling me right now? Do I actually feel turned on in my genitals or not? Like, are these things happening? And from that place, truly tuning in, okay, from that place, what do I want? And from that place, what do I not want? Mm-hmm. Encouragement for the other person to do the same. And then if and only if I can honor your desires and your boundaries, and you can honor my desires and my boundaries within this container, then we can have a really juicy experience. But because I did the work of really owning that for myself before I communicated it with you.
And that's the shit I'm talking about, Yosef. That's the shit right there. Because it's like, yeah, you're right. How many of us, you know, we're in the intellect and we're in the concept of consent, and it's been inundated in this culture around what it is, but how many of us are actually taking that in anymore? And how many of us really have gone into ignoring it now because, you know, it's just this thought, yeah, I understand it, but there's this embodied experience of consent. Even myself, I think this was a year ago, I was at a play party, and it was a really quick conversation around consent. It wasn't dropped in and practiced. And it was just like, you know, somebody says no, say, you know, honor the no, the kind of thing, blah, blah, blah. And somebody was touching my back that I didn't want to be touching me, but I froze and I could not. For whatever reason, like I, you know, I have my own personal reasons, but in that moment, I could not access the words. They weren't there. It was as if the disconnect between my body and then my mind. And afterward, I was able to process this whole experience and have a conversation with the person from a place of information. For the person, not shame, but information for the person. This person did not know. This was the first play party they had ever been to. They were mortified that, you know, some people in the space felt violated, and getting to explain and educate in this place, because there is, as much as we think we understand the concept, it is can be really confusing.
What a blessing for that person that they got to have you. person who's like integrated and understands and can both give information and at the same time hold a place of compassion and understanding for where the person's coming from. A lot of times that's not the way it ends up for people.
Yeah, it's interesting to have these conversations of boundaries, violations, consent, conversations, miseducation, education. Like, it's not, this helps us to see that none of this is really black or white.
Oh, yeah.
And because it's not black and white, we can unintentionally do harm. And that's why it's so important to prepare ourselves, to have the time of preparation, whether it's a play party, whether it's a psychedelic ceremony, whether it's a play scene with somebody, you know, how much we prepare is just as important as the actual experience itself.
And each of those experiences really requires a different type of framework. Mm-hmm. Like at a play party, I'll always, when it's new people and some maybe some more experienced, some newer, it's in like this kind of like a lot of people type of environment. It's like, okay, let's get really enthusiastic consent. If it's not a fuck yes, it's a fuck no. If you're in a scene, you're going to step into a scene with someone. That's not always true. If it's not a fuck yes, it's a fuck no. Sometimes it's a maybe and I'm hesitant. And it's a conversation around what will create the safety for you to explore this edge. Mm-hmm. That's a very different consent talk. So every situation, like what I was saying earlier, if it's professional, if it's mutual, if it's, you know, a big container, if it's a small container, each of those require their own sets of dynamics for, it really depends on what you're looking to explore. And I find what happens is it's so easy for us. And I catch myself in this too, rest on our laurels. Oh, this is the consent framework I use. I'll just always use this, right? Each time, like, how can we step into the container with curiosity for what will most benefit this container?
Mm-hmm. And to pause, slow down, reflect throughout.
Yes.
That it's not just a yes or no at the beginning and then that's
it. Keep checking it.
Right, right. And ultimately, this is the theme of this entire episode is nuance. Mm-hmm. It's like the power of nuance in sexuality, in our evolution, in conversations and relationships is like this, as much as we think that there is no guidebook to any of us. All the people who think that they wrote the book for any of this, like ultimately we are the ultimate authors. We just have to learn how to be in the nuance of these spaces. It comes back to something I repeatedly see with my couples, and I know from our conversations that you've experienced this with some of your clients as well, which is why I want to bring this forward, of like how many couples go into play party experiences and they think ahead of time that they're okay with something, their partner playing with somebody of the opposite sex or somebody, you know, making out with somebody of the opposite sex or going down on somebody with the opposite sex, but then afterward have this experience of repulsion or they lose their arousal for their partner or they feel really betrayed or upset about that, even though beforehand they were okay with it. How do you, and this again comes back to the nuance, nobody did anything wrong. This is just a part inside of ourselves. So how do you walk people through a process of how to be with that, those nuances, even though they said yes?
Yeah, I love that you said nuance because nuance is really the way I always think about things. As we are constantly evolving creatures, then so does our understanding of things need to evolve. And if we rely on old frameworks, then it won't work necessarily. And that's why you can have a situation where a couple can walk into a play party and they have all their agreements set and suddenly something comes up. And maybe it was within, you know, with technically within all the agreements, but it's meeting a part of myself that I didn't know was there before. And all of a sudden it's like, oh shit. So I guess the question can become at that point, do we dig our heels into our pain and just want to stay in that and move from a place of reacting to their own pain and wounding and not learn from it? Or do we recognize we're not playing against each other? We're on a team here. How can we grow and learn from this experience? And what new insights does it bring? Mm-hmm. So I think that it's always, yeah, your relationship to how you work through things. And so that is the most important. Are we playing on the same team or are we playing mm-hmm. against each other? Mm-hmm. And definitely a lot of times in play spaces, it can be easy to keep score and tally. It's like, how much is the other person interacting versus how much am I interacting? And then there's a comparison thing. And then it's like, oh, then maybe there's like, it hits on some wounding of being like not included or of mm-hmm. being rejected. And that can create all these dynamics that are your personal issues, but now you get that you may be projecting them onto your partner, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're playing on the same team, then you get to explore those things and your partner gets to have tenderness and compassion for you and you get to take responsibility and you get to do that kind of work. And mm-hmm. that's when something that when you go and you heal that, that's when you get the opportunity for something that used to be like, oh, that was so painful for me to now become compersion. It's like, oh, because I healed it inside myself, now I get to like enjoy that for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's brave to be someone who says, right now I'm feeling jealousy, or right now I'm feeling left out, or right now I'm noticing that there's a part inside of me that's afraid that I'm not enough. Like that is brave to do in and of itself. And I think so many of us have in our in our programming that if we share that with our partner, that our partner is going to be disgusted with us and be like, oh, then you're not a good partner. I don't want to be with you if you're feeling jealousy. But there's a difference between acting on jealousy from an unconscious place and trying to like, you know, revenge the other person, be vengeful, versus saying, you know, there's, I'm scared.
Yeah. And we can have compassion for ourselves because, you know, if someone, you know, someone's partner is having an interaction with someone of the opposite sex and it makes you less attracted to them. In a certain sense, that's your personal issue. But in the broader sense, it's not even really you. That's mm-hmm. because of like some kind of purity consciousness that exists in society. That mm-hmm. like the more that your partner's interacted with other people, the less pure they become for you.
Oof.
And it creates that it's the Madonna horror complex, which exists on the other side also around like the bad boy, good boy complex, like the who's my husband versus who's like the fuck boy, right? So it exists on both sides. And we get to take a look at that. And it's not just something that's personal, but something that's in the collective. It's like, wow, how can I start healing that for the collective? How can I step into a play party and be an example of truly like inclusivity and integration and unconditional love and owning boundaries and communication in that mm-hmm. space. So, and I think that's what I love about the Mystery Temple is that you get to come there and you can just watch someone else's interaction in the space and learn so much from that, from how they're being. And that's why mm-hmm. I love it that I have in the space, I have tantricas who are super into the energy stuff, but they're the actual explicit sexuality is edgy for them. And then I have swingers who will, they'll fuck someone they just met, no problem. But like having suddenly eye contact, that's too much intimacy, right? Like eye gazing shit. You didn't tell me there was going to be eye gazing here. That was going to get gangbanged, you know? So it's like for all these people to learn from each other, the kinksters and the non-monogamous and the queer folk and all these people to see how every one of these groups of people is unraveling this toxic relationship that has been created between ourselves and our sexuality. Mm. And we do it through alleviating our own judgment towards others and towards our own personal desires.
Yeah, that's so incredible. I mean, I think it's a skill to and truly a talent to be able to create diversity in spaces, you know, in any spaces, in any community, how to create diversity, because that's how we learn, how we expand our own narrow images of what how we define human interaction or love or sex or anything in this world, right? Is by witnessing these references of other people being able to express themselves, and how much more polarized we become when we are, when we just surround ourselves with like-minded individuals. So kudos to you for being able to do that, for encouraging that.
Yeah.
Is there, as we're wrapping up today's conversation, is there any particular advice that you would give to a couple who wants to step into group sex or play parties? Because a lot of people aren't in LA. They're from all over, but they're curious about this type of living, this type of lifestyle. And perhaps what they Google is not the conscious container type of group play that's available to them when they Google.
Yeah.
So what would you say to them?
Right. In a lot of places, it's not necessarily what's going to be available, but I think we are creators of our own reality. And mm-hmm. so what that allows us to do is, as a couple, first get on the same page. What are the things we're looking to explore? What would make you feel really alive? What would make me feel really alive? Some of those things are going to be good for both of us. Why not start with those? And then also take turns. How much can we step into creating space for the other person's desires as well within our own boundaries? And through that place, maybe a first step is you just go to a play party, but you have an agreement to just voyeur. And then next party, maybe you actually have interactions with just your partner, right? Take it slow. Start mm-hmm. opening up. Also, take off the pressure of having to have sexual interactions with other people and make friends. Mm-hmm. Have conversations. See who you feel safe with. See who feels like it could be fun. So as you start like taking it slow, exploring, connecting intimately with people, non-sexual intimacy, emotional intimacy, intellectual intimacy, get to know yourselves more. That's important. And the thing about desires are, because we've been and boundaries, that we've learned so much to repress them, mm-hmm. that the way that we learn about them is by speaking them out. So mm-hmm. just by having a conversation with your partner, these are different things that, you know, I'd be curious about in a non-judgmental environment where your desire is valid, even if we don't choose to act on it. And the more you speak, I think the more clarity that you get. And then you get to slowly tiptoe and experiment and play and undoubtedly have missteps and learn from them and continue from there in that dance. Mm-hmm.
Going slow, of course, talking and giving yourself permission to make mistakes and repair. I think that repair piece is really, really important. Yeah, it's only when we go slow in this that we can actually catch those nuances that we've, you know, talked about throughout this episode. Because how many times I've had clients say, you know, they've developed UTIs, or their body has a reaction, or they have a difficult time with arousal, and it's in further investigation, it's because they've suppressed their boundary in order to meet this ideal version of themselves that they thought that their partner needed, or they wanted to be fun. They didn't want to be a party pooper. They wanted to be, you know, super available. They wanted to be the quote unquote perfect poly partner. They wanted to be, you know, sexually expressed, but there's another part of them that said, you know what, but not with this person, or, but I don't want to have sex with people, but they, you know, again, bypass that. So we think that can only occur. We can only catch those smaller voices and maintain, you know, what we talked about earlier, integrity or alignment with ourselves when we slow, when we're reflective to catch them yeah. in order to act on them.
I love what you said about the bypassing. You can't, like, if you really feel into it and you imagine the situation that you want and you're really communicative about it, you'll notice an arousal. Cocks and pussies, they just don't lie.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're forcing yourself, you'll notice, because it's they don't come online in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much wisdom in our genitals.
Amen. Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. The body has a different intelligence that our mind can't always override. Yeah. Beautiful conversation. Yosef, I'm so stoked to have you on here. And where can people find you?
Best way to find me is on Instagram, Yosef Segui. And if you spell my name right, I'm the only one. My website's the same. It's yosefsegui.com. It's about to have a whole overhaul, but it will be the same website. So. Mm-hmm.
And Yosef will be one of our teachers for our upcoming Sex of Psychedelics Alchemy course. Super stoked. He's just got a very playful way of both communicating the spirituality, the consciousness around kink and tantra, as well as he's just brilliant. Like, as you've heard in this conversation, it's the nuances, it's the in-betweens, it's the reflections that help us to be able to expand our eroticism in ways that are healthy rather than destructive. So thank you so much for coming on.
Love and appreciate you so much. And I love the work that you do. And I love that you are here on this planet and doing such good things for so many people.
Well, that was fun. Thanks for tuning in, lovers. And if you want to experience more ecstasy and sexual liberation, head over to sexlovepsychedelics.com and learn about how you can join me for any one of my online or live events. And while you're there, grab my free guide on sex and psychedelics. Remember, this podcast is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Please contact your healthcare provider and local law before pursuing any of the products or psychedelics discussed. And one final note here. I make this show specifically for you. If you're loving the show, then be sure to leave me a review in iTunes or Spotify to let me know. Happy to be here and happy to serve. I'll see you next time on Sex, Love, Psychedelics.